Amen. So let us start with a couple of readings. And somebody turn to Jeremiah 18 and somebody else to Romans 9. Jeremiah 18, go ahead and do verses 1 through 6. And whoever's going to Romans, verses 19 through 21. Who's got Jeremiah? Go ahead.
The word which came to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, "Arise and go down to the potter's house, and there I will cause you to hear my word." Then I went down to the potter's house, and there he was, making something out of wood. And the vessel that he made of clay was marred in the hand of the potter. So he made it again into another vessel, as it seemed good to the potter to make. Then the word of the Lord came to me, saying, "O house of Israel,
good." And who's got Romans? 19 through 21. This is an interesting couple of passages, both talking about the potter and the clay, both the potter being God in these cases. The first vessel, it says, was marred. And so first of all, what does marred mean?
Ruined, decayed, corrupt.
I occasionally forget to do that. I'll do that in the high school class. I'll blather on for 10 minutes, and then one of the kids will be like, "We don't know what that word means, man." I got to start all over. So he's working with the clay, and it becomes messed up in some way. And so what's he do with it?
Starts over.
Starts over with what?
With the clay.
He doesn't throw it away and get new clay. He starts over with the clay he already has. And so I don't know if you all have ever worked pottery, especially pottery on a wheel. You can put a thumb in the wrong place on pottery on the wheel, and that thing just goes sideways on you. It starts flopping all over the place, and just it's a mess. And it's just like, well, that's over. And you just clump it down on the thing, pull it into a big old ball again, and just start over from scratch. So it could have been something like that. It could have been there was a bubble in the clay, and then, you know, that's not going to work. It's going to get destroyed whenever you heat it in the kiln. You got to start over. So I think that's an interesting point to make with the first one, is that, you know, he's working with the clay, and if it gets messed up, he stays working with the same clay. Then in Romans, it says that, it's talking about, you know, does the clay have a say in it? The clay doesn't have a say in it, right? Clay doesn't get to decide whether it's worthy or not. The potter decides if it's worthy or not, and it starts over. He starts over if he wants to. And then he continues on to make one vessel for honor and another for common use. So, what is the clay in this metaphor, or in these metaphors?
People.
In Jeremiah, it was the nation of Israel. And in Romans, it's
Christians.
So why is it Christians? Why is it not just people? God is molding people into what he wants them to be. Why is it Christians and not just everybody?
They have to want to be molded.
There are a couple of things the author says in here. I think it's actually in the next section. He says, where does he say it? Yeah, there it is. At the bottom of page 25, in order for this illustration to work in our lives, we must make ourselves clay. So the point he's trying to make here is not everybody is clay. You have to make yourself clay, and then you have to consent to be molded. So, what are we supposed to do as the clay? So we make ourselves clay, okay. But then, what is our role in this? It's not quite the same as real clay, right? Our role is not just to sit there. What's our role? Conform to the potter's hands? That's a good answer. Yeah, it's something we'll get to here in a minute. It's a process, right? So the first thing is we have to submit. And then as you work the clay, you get all the air bubbles out and stuff like that. You get it into a shape that you can fire. Because if you don't know what you're doing and you just make some random shape, it's liable to just shatter whenever you fire it. And then the firing, as he said, and I'm repeating myself a bit for anyone that's online, or repeating him rather, the firing then continues to remove the impurities and bring it to the final formed vessel, which of course here it says, making from the same lump one vessel for an honorable use and another for a common use. So in this section he says, in order for us to be clay in God's hands, we must have these four things that are up here on the PowerPoint slide. Faith, humility, meekness, and obedience. So why do we have to have these four things? We talked a little bit about submission a moment ago. But what about these four things? Why do you have to have faith to be clay?
Another word for faith is trust. So you're trusting God knows what. Don't trust that God knows what's best. You're not going to be willing for Him to mold you. So that's the first thing. Is whatever He says is best for me, best for me. I believe that.
Yeah, the author talked a little bit at the beginning of this lesson that he may be stretching the metaphor a bit. But he says the Bible doesn't expressly say this, but we're going to take some examples. So, but I'll say, like, if you're working with clay, sometimes it can feel like the clay is fighting back against you. Like it's like, why won't you become the thing that is in my mind that I'm trying to make here? And yeah, if we're combating back against God, if we don't have that belief and that, again, submission. Humility kind of goes in hands with submission, but it's also talking about, you know, getting into our mind what our shape should be. Disagreeing with the potter, as it were. What about meekness? What does meekness mean? We talk about that from time to time.
Strength under control.
How does that apply to clay? Yeah, definitely. It's a balance. I'm struggling to extend the metaphor. Wait a minute.
You've got to be strong enough to be molded.
Well, right.
So, you have lots of materials that you can play with, but it's not going to stand up at all.
Yeah.
Held back down.
And when you're working with clay, right, if you don't have enough water in the clay, then you can't get it into a shape. And if you have too much water in the clay, it just slumps down into nothing. And then obedience, I think we've covered that well. Is there anything else we should add to the list? We added submission a moment ago. Is there anything else we should add to the list that we have to have as a characteristic to be good clay?
I think it's important to note that when we're talking about humility and meekness, that that's what leads to the obedience. In other words, they're so tied together.
Yeah.
Humility and meekness are almost the same exact thing. But he says, so meekness is the willingness to yield to God's will. Obedience is actually yielding to God's will. So they're very closely tied together.
Yeah. So, what is it about us that God is molding? What's He shaping about us?
Our mind.
Our mind.
Spirit.
So, how's He shaping our mind? Okay. What shape is He trying to get it into? Does that make sense? Am I extending the metaphor too far? Shaped like Jesus' mind. It says that in a lot of places, right? You know, be of the same mind. Have this same attitude. Have this, you know. He's looking to make us be in the pattern of Jesus. Shaping our mind. The second thing you said was our spirit. So we can think about the attitude and the thinking. What does it mean for our spirit to be shaped? That may be related to the attitude also. If we think about something that's molded with clay, it's molded to a purpose, right? I go and I mold a bowl or I mold a pitcher. Back then they molded all sorts of things that we don't think about really because we've got machined tools and fancier ways to deal with metal and things like that. They'd make clay stoppers just to keep things stuck, you know? If you didn't have cork, which was kind of expensive back then, you could make a stopper out of clay or something like that. There were lots of things that they would mold. So, think about it like that. Think about it from a functional standpoint. He's molding our mind, He's molding our spirit, and, oh, go ahead, Stan.
Well, Ephesians 2:10 tells that we are created for His will, for His workmanship. He's got purposes for us. And so the idea of this is that when we transform into whatever purpose He has for us. If that helps. Or
yeah, yeah. And I worry that sometimes we think about He's transforming our mind and our spirit, and we think about these things as very internal. But A, if the transformation is not complete, then it won't manifest outwardly. And if it doesn't manifest outwardly, it's pointless. So, okay, I've molded you into the perfect pitcher. But if we never use you to pour things, then what was the point? I think he actually makes that point later in the lesson. We're not being molded for ornamentation. We're being molded for work. And so, when He molds our mind, when He molds our spirit, that affects our behavior. It's not molding our behavior necessarily, but our behavior is the outgrowth of the molding. If he molds you to be, the whole time I studied this thing, I was like, this metaphor is going too far. But if He molds you to be a pitcher, and you're like, I'm going to be a hammer. Well, you're just going to be a shattered pitcher. when somebody starts trying to hammer something in with this pitcher. He's molding you for a purpose, but then if you don't fulfill that purpose, then you're worthless. So we mentioned before, we're molded by the teachings of God. We've talked a little bit about some of the points that are under here to be transformed. To not be conformed. The renewing of our mind. He makes a point at the bottom of page 26 that this is not forced on us. It can't be forced on us. Why can't it be forced on us? What would it mean if it was forced on us?
Right, that's where the, you know, talking about meekness being the strength part, you know, willing to align yourself, being strong in that sense. The strength is our free, what's right, our free will. We've got the free will to do whatever we want. In that sense, there's that strength, but allowing ourselves to be transformed by the Word, allowing ourselves to be molded by the Word.
Yeah, if you have no choice, you can't obey. You may be doing exactly what he wants you to do, but you're not obeying, you're being forced. And that submission, that obedience, that humility, these things that we're called to be, that is the free choice that is the way predestination works, right? God has predestined these people to be in heaven. Well, who are these people? They're the people that make the choice. They're the people that submit. The people that have the humility. The people that obey. Wow, you can really tell the time of day that I study these things by the notes I write myself. I don't read y'all every note I write myself. I write myself notes like this. What we do to be done to, but we also are doing some of the doing to. That makes sense. That makes sense, but maybe it's something like, you know, it's not quite a proverb there. But the point I was trying to make there, we've already talked about, you have to be the clay. You have to do something to be the clay. But you also have to continue in doing something. You can't be like, all right, I made myself the clay, and you sit back and like, it's all on you, God. Let's do it. It's all on God in a way that we're his workmanship. We are the thing that he's molding and all that types of things. But he's molding us into work, and then we've got to work. And even the molding that we do, I think it was mentioned by Debbie a moment ago, you know, like being in the Word is part of the molding, right? Well, God's not injecting the molding into the pot. We are sitting there and we are doing parts too. We're doing our study. We're working with one another. We're building one another up. We're building that strength in ourselves such that the next step can be taken.
I think that what you said at the beginning, it points back to it, is that the people that he's talking about, first of all, the Israelites and Jeremiah and the Christians, is that God basically is saying that I'm the one that's in control, but he's talking only to the people who put Jesus, put God in control. And so why are you trying to resist me in this? You have put me in control, so you ought to be doing what I tell you to do, or acting the way I have to act. But individuals who are unwilling to be molded, then they aren't part of this illustration. In either of those cases, they're just not part of it. So, intrinsic in the illustration itself, because of who he's talking to, is the reason we're in this situation is because you supposedly have put me here. So why are you resisting, or you are not to resist? Because of that, which requires a will on our part.
Yeah. and it's continual, and it becomes a more fine, a more fine-tuned work as it goes on. When you think about somebody that's making some sort of pottery, they start out with a lump of clay, and they work it into a basic shape of what they're going for. But as they get towards the end, they're doing the more detailed work. They're building the spout, or they're making it, you know, in a way to do precisely the best thing that this thing can do. You know, you make two pitchers, they're not going to be necessarily the same. They may have a different kind of spout because of what they're being used for. They may have a different kind of handle because of what they're being used for. But as you develop that, you may discover, well, this isn't working out. This clay I'm working with isn't, you know, this is, all right, I can't go the path I was intending to. That's not quite how it works with God. God knows what we should be from the beginning. He's not going to accidentally make the wrong pot. But he is going to continue into that finer and finer detail. And we have to be willing all along the way. That's like where he's talking to him and he says, hey, by now you guys ought to be teachers, but I've got to go back and teach you the rudiments because you're not ready to eat meat. You're not ready for this next thing. You should be. You should be ready for that next stage of molding, but you're not. So we've got to go back and focus on the original form because I can't get you to that greater purpose. I can't get you to that greater usefulness to the kingdom. Ahead of myself. I think I was actually talking about stuff I meant to talk about here. Molding is a process, it changes over time. There in the molding is a process section, in the third paragraph, it says, the illustration also reminds us of God's patience and personal interest in our lives. We may sin and fail to be what God would have us to be, but as long as we seek forgiveness and yield to Him, God can make us right again. It is a challenge. Maintaining humility, maintaining meekness is a challenge. You see that happen with the apostles throughout their time with Jesus. They'd come back and they'd start talking about who's the greatest in the kingdom. And Jesus is just like, why are you even thinking about that? Like, that's not even how you should be thinking. You're not being the clay that I need you to be right now. Or you'd have, it seemed like often Peter, who would buck up and try to say, this is the clay I need to be, right? You can't wash my feet, you're not being the clay. I'm the one that says how this shape goes, and the shape is that I wash your feet. That's how it's supposed to be. Well, then wash all of me. You're not being the clay. I'm telling you what I'm trying to do with you right now. If you're already clean, you don't need another bath. You just need your feet cleaned. I'm trying to make a point here, and you're not being the clay. Somebody turn over to 2 Timothy for me, please. Molding has a purpose. Well, let me read 2 Timothy 2, verses 20 and 21.
But in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay, some for honor and some for dishonor. Therefore, if anyone cleanses himself from the latter, he will be a vessel for honor, sanctified and useful for the master, prepared for every good work.
So many vessels, many different purposes for the vessels, but in general, what is the purpose we're being molded for? Stan kind of already said it.
To be molded after God's will.
To be molded after God's will for what purpose? What are we? What's he doing with us after he molds us? Prepared for every good work. We're tools in the house. We're tools in the kingdom. Our purpose is the furtherance of God's will, the furtherance of the kingdom. Our purpose is service. What does it mean to be molded for dishonor? It says that in there. In the other passage it said some are molded for honor and some are molded for common use. Here it says some are molded for honor, some are molded for dishonor. I'm not sure. I feel like sometimes I'm never going to be ready for the kiln. I'm never going to be molded enough that they're ready to fire me.
We're sure that that's not the case.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things that I think might help is the idea of looking at Paul's writing in 1 Corinthians 3. He talks about the work that he and Barnabas were doing in converting souls. Some were precious, some were wood, hay, and stubble and burned up in the fire, suffering loss because of it. Same idea, I think, here. God's workmanship, everything we do, the smallest thing to the most ostentatious thing, is precious. It's not a common thing because God has authorized us to do it. So we should place that value. So the least among us is still a great house. Or in the great house, a vessel of gold or a vessel of silver. The common dishonorable things, the clay and the pots and all, it'd be like saying, "Hey, you're a golden pitcher rather than a chamber pot or a trash can." You know, it's talking about the value. There are many things that are just don't have any intrinsic value, not for anything important. But as a Christian, God has put you, He made you special, sanctified you, honored you, so you're the precious thing. It's what you're supposed to do. So it's talking about the value that you have. that's the kind of thing you are supposed to be. So if instead you're living your life without sanctification, without holiness, you're turning out to be a trash can when you should be this gold pitcher. Because this is what God has made you. Can you imagine having a gold pitcher put in the corner and throwing trash at it? It just doesn't make sense. And I think that's kind of the illustration.
Yeah, I very much agree. I've had people look at this passage and they'll say something like, you know, you may be a really nicely made clay pitcher that's for serving, or you may be a toilet in the kingdom of heaven. And it's like, no, that is not what it is saying. It is not saying that at all. This in particular, it's not talking about the hay and the stubble that would be burned up in this passage. It's saying that, you know, you could be gold, you could be silver, you could be wood or you could be clay, but you could still be honorable in any of those states. But you also could be dishonorable in any of those states. And if you're trying to form yourself, you're going to form yourself into something that's dishonorable. Or as Thacker is saying, if you are bringing impurities into it that don't allow you to be honorable. You can imagine you get a pitcher and you go to pour and the handle just breaks off and the pitcher, you know, that pitcher has dishonored itself in my house. It has not done what it is supposed to do. It's saying if you are properly humble, submissive, and all those types of things, and you are formed and allowing yourself to be formed by God into what you should be, then it will be honorable and you will serve your purpose. Dennis?
We're mixing
metaphors here, yeah.
But there's something that we have to do too, to where we will eventually get to the point where God will overlay our vessels with gold and silver, and then we will be the vessels of honor. Useful in when we're doing the Lord.
Yeah. It might be helpful to start back in verse 14. Paul, of course, talking to Timothy here. Remind them of these things and solemnly charge them that in the presence of God, not to wrangle about words, which is useless and leads to the ruin of the hearers. Be diligent to present yourself approved to God as a workman who does not need to be ashamed, accurately handling the word of truth. But avoid worldly and empty chatters, for it will lead to further ungodliness, and their talk will spread like gangrene. Among them are Hymenaeus and Philetus, men who have gone astray from the truth, saying that the resurrection has already taken place, and they upset the faith of some. Nevertheless, the firm foundation of God stands, having this seal: the Lord knows those who are his, and everyone who names the name of the Lord is to abstain from wickedness. Now in a large house there are not only gold and silver vessels, but also vessels of wood and earthenware, some to honor and some to dishonor. Therefore, if anyone cleanses himself from these things, he will be a vessel for honor, sanctified, useful to the master, and prepared for every good work. Now flee from youthful lusts and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart, but refuse foolish and ignorant speculation, knowing that they produce quarrels. The Lord's bondservant must not be quarrelsome, but be kind to all, able to teach, patient when wronged, with gentleness, correcting those who are in opposition, if perhaps God may grant them repentance, leading to the knowledge of the truth, and they may come to their senses and escape from the snare of the devil, having been held captive by him to do his will. So, and by all means, you may be right and I may be wrong, but the way I took when he says in verse 21, if anyone cleanses himself from these things, I took that to be the second half of the section of verse 14 through 19, where in verse at the beginning of verse 14 through 19, he's saying, here's the good things you need to do. And then at the end, he says, here's the things you need to not do. And like Hymenaeus and Philetus, do some of those things. And if you cleanse yourself from those things, then you will be for honor. And then he goes on to talk more about the workmanship. I don't know. I may be wrong. It may be that the gold and the silver vessels are for honor and the wood and the earthenware are not. Or it may be that all of those types of vessels might be for honor or for dishonor. I need to study it more. You always got to study more. There's always something else to find in here. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he's talking about the church. We're all vessels in the church. Some are to honor and dishonor. But I think the dishonor is completely originating within the people. There's nothing God is making for dishonor. But in the house, there are dishonorable people. That's what it comes down to. There are dishonorable people in the house. And you have to cleanse yourself of these dishonorable things in order to be honorable. And then you can be used for the purpose that God has for you.
You can use Hymenaeus and Philetus as the example. They were Christians, but they were false teachers, so they had jeopardized their standing with God. They were still in the house in the sense that they had become believing through the gospel of Christ, but they were not honorable.
That's the idea of obedience and steadfastness that we talked about earlier. Yeah. So I got two more questions. How do we know if we've served our purpose or are serving our purpose? I remember one time we were talking about the Apollos planted and Paul planted and Apollos watered, and somebody here said, "Well, I think I'm a plow." And I was talking to him later. I'm like, "I don't think that's part of the metaphor. I don't think tearing up the ground is part of what it's talking about there." But how do you know? You know, if you think your purpose is to be a plow, how do you know if that's even a valid purpose for you to have?
Again, it's God's workmanship. Ephesians 2:10 says, we're created for His work, what He is determined to do.
Yeah.
So if we're not, it's not, I mean, everyone, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, is going to do anything better than you, does the work.
Yeah, you're back in the Word. It's like, I'm going to do this. The Word doesn't say anything about that. Then he has not been telling you to do that. That is not your purpose, bowl. That is not your purpose, pitcher. You go look in the just so many of the apostasies that have happened through all time, right? All through the time of the Israelites and since Christ, all the apostasies that happened. And then when somebody goes back to the Word, it's like, that's not what God said. You can even take the example Stan gave about Ahab. It's like, we should go to war. Would you ask God? Let me ask God. God says you shouldn't go to war. Well, let's go to war. What did you? I don't know why Jehoshaphat went. Honestly, he finally got the prophet that was actually a prophet of God, and that prophet might have shown up a little sarcastic in that case to start with, because he did tell them to go to war to start with. Then Ahab said, how many times have I told you that you got to tell me the truth? He's like, you're going to die, man. And then Jehoshaphat still consented to going after checking the word of God, not being the clay that he's supposed to be. Last question. I'm going to use one of his questions. Question number 4. What form should disciples desire to take? It's a little obvious, but it's a good one to end on. What form should we want to be in? There are 2 good answers to this question. To become as little children? Maybe there's 3 good answers to this question. Yeah.
Paul said, imitate me as I imitate
Christ. And that's one thing about children. Children are malleable. That's part of what Christ is talking about there. Children are malleable. Yeah, the form that we should desire to be in is whatever form God wants us to be. And that form is going to be patterned after Christ. All right, next week we will be going over the vine and the branches. Disciples' dependence upon Christ. Thanks, everyone.